now that we know each other, I think we can start our business. I receive apologies from Honorable Investment. Is there any other apologies? If none, then we proceed with our business. TG, I think I'm going to give over to you. If you want to give a short input, you're welcome to do so.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and members. You will recall the last time we appeared before the committee, I think was it last year, October, November. We were going through a number of challenges with regard to the entity, but there's been good progress. But in the interest of time, I'd like to hand over to the acting CEO. But also to note that with regard to the good progress, we've had a number of meetings with the deputy president. I think the last one was it last week or 2 weeks ago? Was it last week? Two weeks ago. His intervention, both from him and also the two ministers, has been very helpful, and there are things that we still need to work on with the entity. But what we can confirm is that we have the turnaround plan on the table, but also to put on the chairperson that we've also managed to comply with regard to the tabling of the corporate plan. I think it's tabled on the 29th or 30th of April. And subsequent to that, the entity has also presented the corporate plan to the portfolio committee and telecommunication process. So there is definitely good progress on the table, but there's still things that we need to manage. But I think the main thing is that it's going to be a long journey. There's no way that the entity is going to be turned around in a day. So we're doing a project for a few years that we need to really persevere. So this is one entity that requires us persevere and really dedicate our time over a longer period to support. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairperson, members of the committee, good morning, and thank you very much for having us here. For some of us, it's the first time, so I'd like to apologize upfront if perhaps the submission was lacking in certain areas, and we'll very much be glad to receive that feedback so that we can provide committee with the necessary information and the necessary details that the committee will require of us. As the TD has indicated, secondly, since my arrival at the post office in July last year, it's been an incredible 10-month period. Based on what the organization had experienced in the past, and also what the organization went through in the last 10-11 months. Also during the period, we cannot downplay the impact of the turbulence that the organization has experienced, the impact of that to the general public in South Africa, as well as the impact of that to businesses, and the impact of that to a number of state institutions that depend significantly on the post office, and that depends significantly on a fully functional post office. The development last year, particularly with the industrial action, I think it exposed the role that the post office is playing and is supposed to play in the socio-economic space in our country, and that perhaps over a period of time we have begun to underestimate that role until the time that the post office was on the brink of being dysfunctional, and that's when we realized how important it is socially. The services it provides to the marginalized communities, the services it provides to schools and to the students and to the universities, the services it provides in the distribution of some critical items, the chronic medication, the visas, all those became more pronounced when the post office actually almost came to a grinding halt. Since then, Madam Chair, the DG has indicated, a lot has happened. A lot of effort has been put by the department. A lot of effort has been put by the post office management team, and at this stage perhaps I should call them a depleted post office management team, as I'm going to indicate later on. also the support from the Honorable Minister himself has been really important to us and led us to a stage where we are now. As the teacher has already alluded, some of the milestones, albeit some of the related milestones nonetheless, given the circumstances. And recently, of course, particularly with the turnaround, the Deputy President, as you'll be aware, was also given the responsibility of overseeing the post office. And again, his influence as well as his experience on these matters has been very, very useful and profound. Well, this is very broad. Madam Chair, in what we're going to cover. We're not going to perhaps go to much detail, which does give us room. Therefore, if members require more information and detail, we will be willing to provide that either today or the moment we get back to the office so that, again, the members can be fully informed of the developments. Based on the presentation that we sent, we're not going to cover all the slides, but of course, questions can be asked on the slides that are submitted, but just to keep the discussion flowing, we're going to cover only some of the slides, but I'll indicate which slide or slide number am I moving to as I go through the presentation. So without further ado, I'm going to go straight to the presentation. And those are some of the key elements that will be covered during the presentation. Which will be basically the, by and large, we're going to spend a lot of time on strategic turnaround plan. We're not criticizing the issues that have happened, but really, in recent times, we have tended to focus a lot on what can be done to turn this very important institution around, what can be done to do so successfully. We're also going to speak about the key focus areas. What are the numbers looking like? What are the budgets looking like for the next 3 years at a high level? The readiness, I'm going to talk at length about that. More importantly, because it's not the first time that the post office has had a turnaround plan. But in previous occasions, the turnaround plans have not been implemented successfully or have not been implemented at all, much to the frustration of the department and also much to the disappointment without doubt of Parliament. And of course, we have seen the implications of that, in that ultimately the entity could not operate in the manner that it's supposed to operate. There will be a way forward, and in submissions also provided you with some additional information which could be of interest again in bringing more understanding into what the post office is going through and what it's all about going forward. Just on the next slide, slide number three, slide number three, I've moved around, I've just to give you the footprint which is on the screen, just to remind us of the presence of the post office. We all grow up knowing the post office, certainly from an education perspective, as far as I am concerned as an individual. Growing up, a central, and it played a significant role. It just me being able to get my brother reforms, although most of them came back with regret. Eventually, one was successful, and my own children have gone through the same experience with the dysfunctional post office when they were not able to complete their studies. It's because it's present in every little town in South Africa, which is a significant upside. On the other hand, we have now realized that it's a costly presence in some areas, and unless it's a way of better utilizing the post offices, we run a very big risk of not being able to improve the presence and the network of the post office in South Africa, unless we fix the cost side of things. So all in all, we've got about 2,486 points of presence, which means it's post offices themselves. We also have got agencies that we use as post offices. Certainly, San Juan, the general dealer, is an agency there because it's a collector post office. We collect our mail, but it's not an actual post office structure. So we still have a lot of those structures in place. We have delivered 1.4 billion mail items in the past 12 months. Again, which shows the amount of letter movement that still takes place, even though there has been a significant decline in mail, which is a global phenomenon. But still, there's a lot of letter writing and parcels, smaller parcels that go through the postal system. We are servicing about 13.8 households where we now deliver mail directly. And it's very pleasing to know that some of the villages are actually receiving the service, which is free when mail is delivered into the households. 66 million customers visit our branches roughly per annum. And again, it does bringing into the fore the number of opportunities that are there in the post office. If it can have a traffic of 66 million people, those are 66 million people, by the way, that are also willing to know what the government is doing. And again, it becomes an opportunity while people are queuing in the post offices to know and to get some sort of information about what the government is doing. And I'm just showing the possibilities that are there with the post office once you start looking at it with a different perspective, which is what we have done through the STP. We've got an excess of 13,500 key customers. Madam Chair, the most interesting thing with the post office that we picked up during this analysis is that if you look into our turnover, about 63% of our turnover actually comes from the private sector. So those key customers are absolutely crucial. This is customers like the Edels of this world, the Truers of this world that send a lot of material to banks, our major customers of ours, that send a lot of statements, etc., to the public. So the revenue in it, our contribution actually from the private sector is about 63%, which is important for another different reason. The private sector, in their very nature, are entrepreneurial. So if the post office continues to be hampered by all the disruptions, then private sector customers are going to look for alternative solutions. And that will then further worsen the situation in the post office. 33% of our income, Madam Chair, comes from the government sector. And it's an area that we would like to improve significantly, and that will become part of our strategic aims to partner more with government, utilizing the network that we have. So only 2% actually of our income comes from the public that walk through into the post office. It's only 2%. Really bulk of that said private sector, 33% coming from, roughly 33% coming from government. As you'll be aware, we also have a small bank in comparison, but it's actually a profitable bank. It's a functional bank, and we are going to indicate some of the challenges that it faces and what we are trying to do with regards to that. So with that quick overview, Madam Chair, I'd like then to move into the current status of our business, of where we are now. Firstly, the labor environment has been an Achilles heel for the post office for a number of years and for a number of reasons, which have been communicated in various forums and in various manners. Currently, we do have relative stability, and I'm saying relative stability in that we have not had any major work disruption or disruption of the mail services since November. Obviously, that came at the back of quite an almost crippling industrial action that took close to 4 months, rather, and really led to a lot of long-term implications for the post office. We are operating in an environment where, from what used to be a one union situation with the Communication Workers Union until 2012, we have now had more splinter formations since then. In fact, we now have 4 unions that we are working with. That, without doubt, creates a very interesting political dynamic within the union movement, because now there is a fight for membership. And that fight for membership tends to have...
Can
we just say, key members is looking
for the
fridge.
You
raise it. Okay. Thank you. And unfortunately, those implications, when I'm just tend to... It felt easily in the operations when employees withhold their services or sometimes when they demand that they push for in order for themselves to have a better standing amongst the employees, it demands that tends to be too much for the post office to be able to handle or to stomach given the financial circumstances that the organization is facing. But since then, we are working very hard in terms of developing the relationships with the union leaders. We have a program called the Building the Workplace Relations, which is facilitated by the CCMA, and it involves all the national office bearers of the major unions that we have recognized in the post office. It has had its glitches with some of the unions staging lockouts, but they have normally came back and participated constructively, and that has been very useful in us having a better understanding and developing much more constructive relationships with the union leaders. We have also reignited the forum, and this was on the basis of the work that was initially done by Minister Kwele in September, October last year, which resulted in the formation of a leadership forum, national leadership forum, where myself and some of my colleagues here, Andrew being one of them, would meet regularly with the union leaders. Those meetings were quite important because for the very first time, union leaders were actually given the true state of the post office. They were transparent meetings, uncomfortable most of the time, but they were transparent. We were able to share with them where the post office stands from a financial point of view. We were able to share with them the challenges that we have. We were able to share with them some of the plans that we have. And that has been ongoing. What has happened since then is that the National Leadership Forum now has been replaced by the structure that is almost operating as a board, with a lot of issues now being handled at regional level. It's still early stages, but the key idea is that we want to make sure that as issues arise in the region, they are handled there by the regional management team as well as the regional union leadership. And of course, if there is no success, those issues can then be escalated to the national level. So those engagements have been very useful in bringing to the fore issues before they become catastrophic. On the financial side, Madam Chair, we are continuing to have serial cash flow constraints. We have an organization that, as far back as 2010, started having less cash inflows versus cash outflows from operations. And what marked the problem there was sort of hidden from the eyes of many people that were scrutinizing the numbers was that there were also some government subsidies that were coming through during those years. Come 2013, when the last piece of the subsidy came through, then the whole thing was laid bare that from an operational point of view, the post office is no longer generating enough cash flows, no longer generating enough revenue to cover the expenses. But if you start stripping the financials down, it's a problem that actually goes back as far back as 2010. It has since become worse because of the impact of the industrial action last year. As things stand, Madam Chair, we have a backlog of about 780 million rand of unpaid suppliers. Some of them with great environment and a great source of stress because they call, they've got my number, they call throughout the weekends and evenings. It's more operators that have been owed by the post office for a number of months, going back to mid-year last year, some of them. In some cases, of course, there are issues with invoices, but by and large, we have got a significant backlog that we are currently trying to deal with, given the constrained cash flows that I've indicated. It's a huge problem, but I'm going to touch later on what is being done to address the problem. So without us giving that backlog, the funding of the cost of this bill will become quite crucial. And we're going to share with the committee what is it that we are doing in that respect. We have been in big discussions with the department as well as the chief procurement officer with regards to how the post office can access more government spend, particularly in products and services that the post office is able to offer. These, of course, have been difficult discussions from the point of view that we need to be very cognizant of what the Constitution says and what the laws of the country say. On the other hand, the government has got an institution that can allow it to reach a number of stakeholders, a number of members of the public, and should be able to do so cheaply, or relatively cheaply compared to the private sector organization. But what has been happening in years and years is that more and more state expenditure, particularly in logistics, has actually been going to the private sector companies. We are working very aggressively with this. We are not, Madam Chair, approaching this with an expectation that the government is going to give us business on a platter, but we are approaching this with a level of aggression that says the post office is going to be more competitive than private sector companies. And I would like to believe that with certainly for myself, with my experience, 23 years experience in the private sector, this is something that the post office can achieve. It will require a significant mindset change, but given the resources that the post office has, we will be able to position the post office as a preferred partner for the government. We would also like to see the post office having a clear benefit from the reserve area, which by definition is any item, mail item or parcel up to 1 kilogram. Currently what we have discovered is that the authority there has not been effective in monitoring that space, that indeed there is no encroachment into that space, because by definition, therefore, that monopoly area, if I can call it that reserve area, by definition, should be able to provide enough financial resources for the post office to be financially sustainable. But it's not happening, and we're going to show that in the next slide. And the main reason for that is that there is a significant encroachment by private sector companies that should not be offering any parcels or mail items less than a kilogram. And because historically there's not been enough focus in managing this particular area from the regulator, we have had a lot of leakage taking place there. The DCPS has been very, very influential in driving the engagement that we have had with the CASA in the last 2 months. We have formally lodged complaints with the CASA, and the CASA is investigating some of the private sector operators that are now illegally encroaching in that preserved space. And we'll be hearing from ICASA very soon in that respect. And also, since the appointment, therefore, members of the committee of the administrator, a lot of work has gone into developing a new business model for the post office, and I'm going to share the highlights of that with you later on. And a number of quick wins have already been realized by that intervention of the administrator and his team, which really was very useful in opening the eyes for the post office management team to look at things differently. I'm going to go to the next slide, number 7, which is just briefly the shareholder mandate for the post office. I'm not going to dwell too much on this particular one. Let's hope it's slide number 7. It's 8. Oh, yeah, apologies for it. I don't share the slide by mistake on my... The flag is a blue triangle. Thank you. The slide basically indicates what are the legal prescripts that govern the post office, and what is it the post office should be operating within. That is the legal framework that it should be operating within. I just wanted to point one key fact at the bottom, the fact that when we're developing the strategic turnaround plan, in our efforts to ensure that there's strong alignment with government, we decided to look into the national development plan and therefore see what role the post office can play through that alignment with the national development plan. So some elements, therefore, of the turnaround plan, especially if you look into the detail of it, does indicate where the post office can play a significant role in terms of supporting the national development plan. And then the next slide is my notes here, slide number 8, 6, 9. Okay, we're not aligned. Thank you for that. I don't know how I lost the sequence here. This really just shows what are the strategic goals for the post office for the current financial year. Without doubt, the primary one is the implementation of the turnaround plan. And I'm really emphasizing this particular one, as I've said, because previously we have had situations where plans have been presented and implementation of those plans has been very weak and non-existent at times. And this time around, we are at a stage where the management team is very much aware that the implementation of the turnaround plan is no longer an option. It's no longer a luxury. It's now a matter of whether we're going to have a fully functional post office or not. We are by no means indicating that the turnaround plan itself is perfect. It's a plan that was developed in a very, very short space of time, given the pressures that we have. So there will always be a room for improvement in the plan. But there's enough material for us to start working very hard on. And indeed, we have started to work hard on implementation of the plan. The second key element of our corporate plan talks about really having a customer-centric organization. We have an organization that previously has been inwardly focused. We've got an organization that has spent a lot of time fighting inward battles amongst managers, territorial battles amongst managers, battles between management and the board, battles between management and employees. And in most cases, those battles have split either into the streets or into the mainstream media. There's not been an organization that really engages with the customer the way in which our competitors, particularly in the logistics space, engage with the customer. We have not been an organization that engages with the customer if you go into a post office branch, the very same way you will find if you are going to a commercial bank. We have not had that level of engagement with the customer. So the drive, therefore, will be to try and bring the post office into a realization that it needs to be a customer-focused organization in order for it to be well-received by the public and in order for it to be a key partner for the government's service delivery program. I've already mentioned, Madam Chair, the role which is aligned, therefore, with the National Development Plan, where we now want to aggressively position SAFO, utilizing the vast network of branches that we have. We need to have SAFO strongly aligned with the government plan, utilizing the vast distribution network that we have, that we can deliver almost anything, anywhere within the Republic. We would like to focus, and will be focusing very much on that to improve on that positioning of SAFO. The post-bank story is one of the stories that perhaps has created an impression that this is like building a nuclear ship that is going to go to the moon, because it's been in the pipeline for such a long time. So as far back as 2005, when the then Minister of Finance signed the memorandum of incorporation for the post-bank, it's been a very long and slow journey for a number of reasons, including the internal issues within the host bank, but also including the alignment with the regulator, in this particular case, the South African Reserve Bank, in that you've got a regulator that is structured towards regulating commercial banks and has got requirements that work very much well with the commercial banks, but not necessarily a small bank that is restricted in terms of what it can offer, in terms of what financial products it can offer. So that on its own has been a challenge in getting what is called a Section 12 approval by the Reserve Bank, which is a very lengthy and demanding process, but we'll cover a little bit of that later on as well. And then the fifth element of our corporate plan spoke to the corporate governance of the organization. We bring in structures to ensure ethical leadership, and Minister Tuan has been very clear about this particular area when he was addressing the House during the budget vote last week, as well as the media, that part of the process that the department is going through in selecting board members is to make sure that this particular area of ethical leadership is also incorporated as part of the criteria that is used to select board members. And then it's to filter through the organization as well. Again, given some of the unfortunate headlines that we have made in this particular area. A number of compliance issues still at the post office, and no doubt that even the Auditor General, who is currently busy with the audit there, is going to unearth a number of compliance issues that the post office is not adhering to. So this particular area will also receive significant focus in the next, or in the current financial year. So in a nutshell, those are the highlights of what our corporate plan entails. I'm going to summarize, Madam Chair, just briefly, what are the key challenges. This is slide number 10 on the back. It's 11. Okay, I'm going to assume that you are one slide behind. Just the key challenges that we have then concretized for the province. Without doubt, leadership, very, very unstable leadership. I think standing under corruption in the last 3 years, we have had close to 4 CEOs in the post office, of course some of them acting, and there's been numerous changes in the board, as well as the board chairmanship as well during the period of time. Adequate funding has been an issue, and this is a global issue as well, with various post office operators globally responding to it differently, others providing clear-cut subsidies, others ensuring that the post office has got a reserve area which can keep it financially afloat. Other governments ensuring that the post office has got preference when it comes to government bank so that it can be financially sustainable. So it's always an issue. The United States is still debating with this issue of whether in excess of $20 billion will actually may help with the funding of the U.S. postal services. It is a global challenge and a very serious one for that matter. The other problem that we are highlighting and that we are dealing with the FTP is our very inflexible operating model. As recent as last week, we were still getting complaints from Sunroll in particular, who wanted to do business with us. Our executives were dealing with them. We were not negotiating. We were just saying to Sunroll, you can only do this if you do 1, 2, 3. You take what we say. We don't care that you're a customer. So again, it goes into the customer centricity of the organization that still requires a lot of work to say you engage with the customer for the solution. It must be a win-win solution rather than imposing on the customer just because you are the post office. So there is still a lot of work that needs to be done there. The execution capability, where we commit to things and don't deliver on them. Last year, Madam Chair, as an example, we were able to receive the authority to borrow up to $320 million from the Ministry, Minister Gwele, in concurrence with Minister Nene. Part of the conditions there was that the post office must save 277 million rand from its operating budget. Once the number is the number, to me the key message there was that the ministers were saying, prove to us that you can actually commit to something and deliver. And we use that aggressively as a rally cry in the organization that if indeed we are going to show seriousness in implementing the turnaround plan once it's been finalized, let's start now and deliver on the 277 target. And I'm quite pleased that the organization was able to deliver the saving of 277 million from budget as the agreement that was signed in September, or the commitment that was made in September to the ministers. Again, it talks to creating an organization that commits and delivers to what it has committed on, rather than make promises and simply sit back with no consequences for that. We have not aligned ourselves with the changing customer needs, which becomes very, very crucial. We have had significant decline in mail. In fact, mail volumes have been declining at roughly 4.3% year on year, with a lot of communication moving into the digital space, and we have not been able to respond. Of course, we are busy with solutions now, and if I can just jump into a particular point, we will be launching by mid-June the digital post office, where service providers, which are our customers, as well as the public, will have the option of receiving a letter to the physical means, ordinary physical means, they need to go to your post box or you have it delivered through your visitor, or they can receive electronic format of it, which would be a high security mail, in other words, compared to the ordinary mail that you download freely from the internet. This one is the high security mail, and we are currently testing the system using all sorts of hacking mechanisms to ensure that it is robust enough and it can be relied upon. And finally, the issues of legislation, particularly as it relates to universal service obligations, the policy issues there, and the department is running with that through its oversight team. So in nutshell, those are the challenges that we have identified through the STP. Those are the challenges that we are trying to address as well in the STP. I've spoken briefly before, Madam Chair, I'm now on slide, I'll call it slide 14. I'll take the chance and say slide 14, although it says slide 13 there.
Yeah.
Now it's 13. 13. 13, yes. 13. This is a very crucial slide because it talks to the branches that we think of as one of our strengths. These are the branches that we have been opening as part of our operating license obligations from ICASA. What has happened over the years, though, is that we have not been good enough in balancing the rate of opening those branches with the cost of running those branches. And what you see presented there is an indication in red that the profits that we have been making from the reserve phase, which is the 0 to 1 kilogram phase, has been declining at a very sharp pace. At the same time, we have been operating more branches, so the retail there, many branches. We've been going on and opening more branches. Whilst opening those branches, the cost of maintaining and running those branches has also been going sky high at an alarming rate. And that huge gap that you see there for contributes significantly to the losses that the post office has been experiencing. And as I said, you start seeing impact of this from 2012 when we started having a significant decline in the subsidy that was hiding some of the challenges in our financials. And of course, unless something is done either to correct that cost line or unless something is done to significantly improve the revenue that is coming through those branches, that problem is going to become bigger. Those jaws will become wider and the net losses will become incredibly unbearable for the post office as an organization. So this is a very powerful slide because it then forces us to find a right balance between growing the number of branches to reach the marginalized communities, at the same time ensuring that we are able to generate enough revenues to cover the cost of running those branches. And this is an indication, therefore, which we can see on the next slide, number 14. It's quite a busy slide, but I will just summarize it, Madam Chair. The circle there, if we have a full circle in any of those lines, it means the post office has got a very solid business model in that particular area. And if the circle is only a quarter red, it indicates, therefore, we've got a very relatively weak business model in that particular area. Just a quick snapshot or a quick glance on those circles, you will see that very few of them have got complete red cells. So most of our area, therefore, in the post office, the business model is not fully developed. I'm going to take one at the top, which is the banking financial services, which then talks to the post bank. Right at the bottom, you will see under savings that have got a solid cycle. Savings are very cheap. I have had my post bank account since 2011. During the period of time, it doesn't operate most of the time when I go to the branch, but I've had it since 2007. It's a very cheap product. It's been very useful in helping me deposit money for my mother. But the moment you start asking for more services in post-bank, the moment you start asking for cell phone banking, internet banking, we are nowhere. So we are very, very rudimentary in terms of the services that we offer. And then that's the picture that you see with most of the things that you do, that very few of them have a consolidated business model. If you can look at the bottom of that under communication fulfillment, when it comes to distribution for a complete cycle, because we are available everywhere, we can reach as many areas. But that is as far as the strength of the model goes. Creativity, we are lacking. Being selective in what we offer, we are very lacking. And I'm going to show later on that a number of the products that we offer are actually not making. And we'll continue to offer those products on the distribution side, even though they are not making. So in reading this slide, it really talks to if the cycle is solid, for a solid business model in this particular area, if it's less solid, then that means our business model requires a lot of work. And again, in highlighting some of the challenges we face during chair, the next three slides are going to talk in a little bit more detail. I'm not going to cover them in detail. I'll just take some highlights from them. On the double business model, that is slide number 15. As I've indicated, on the financial health, I've spoken about the fact that our cost exceeds revenue, and I'm going to show later on why our cost is not coming down easily, why it is not easy to, normally in business, we call it flexing your cost. So if your revenue is coming down, you need to be able to flex your cost accordingly. And the post office has not been able to flex its cost immediately. Why has that been the case? We've got low productivity. Our activity in most of our experience some poor productivity and poor customer service in dealing with some of our post office branches. Certainly, our focus on volume growth has been lacking. We've been comfortable in knowing that we are victims of a declining mail and not looking for alternatives of what can we do given this vast infrastructure that we have. I've spoken about the customer focus, that we are an inwardly looking organization, and as I've indicated as well, the revenue stream is really concentrated with highly vulnerable customers, the private sector customers, who are right now working very, very aggressively to create alternatives to use in post office. I've spoken about the retail revenue, where I've shown that the retail income has been declining, yet the cost of operating our branches has been increasing. And in fact, since we lost the grant account in 2008 and 2009, we've really struggled to have very positive revenue streams coming through the branches. And in most of those branches, they've actually kept the same number of people that we have brought in to manage the grants. We didn't take them out of the system, which of course then increased the cost base, whereas they have lost the revenue that was driving that cost. Let me mention this point on the slide of the information technology, because it's a sore point in the sense that a lot of money has come from the department through the subsidy over a number of years. My analysis goes back to 2006, where a significant amount of money has been coming through the department for IT. For the information, for the IT infrastructure and improving the IT systems. Yes, we have one of the worst IT systems in the banking sector right now, which is becoming a huge challenge for us to get the banking license that we are paying for. Our IT system is unreliable. I'm sure if you can visit one particular branch every day for 10 days, you will experience the network outages, where the network collapses because it's overloaded, or the network is outdated, so it's no longer safe enough and therefore will crash on its own. So this is one major challenge that as an organization we face.
Okay.
No problem, Madam Chair. How much time will you give me? 30 minutes?
No. Take what you want, but try to be short.
No problem.
Yeah.
I'm just mentioning the fact that I've been through this thing so many times. I don't want to
assume
everybody knows. Sorry. I will do so, no problem.
So that they can be enough time to
do questions. No problem. Thank you, Madam Chair. The puzzles business I've spoken about is a big opportunity for us to work with the government in this particular area, from distributing books to pharmaceuticals. I've spoken about the information technology and share, and I've covered legislation as well in terms of the compliance as well as the discussions that are currently taking place between the CASA, the post office, being facilitated by the DTBS. I think the labor movement I've covered, but I would like to mention this point, that the trust between management and the unions is broken, and it's going to take time to fix, especially in a dynamic environment where you've got a number of trade unions, and they also have got their own internal dynamics, so the leadership keeps changing quite frequently. This becomes a serious issue to manage. The leadership challenges are covered in terms of the number of people that have had to run the organization in a short space of time, which creates instability. I've also spoken about the implementation challenge in the past, members of the committee are covered governance and oversight. I think by and large those points have been covered or are self-explanatory. I'm going to request to skip this particular slide number 19 because I've already spoken at length about the widening gap between revenue and cost, and that it is not left, it is not addressed, those costs are going to become even wider over the next coming few years. This quick slide just shows that from 2009, the revenue of the post office has actually struggled to grow. And you will see that the red line, as I indicated on detail, has continued to come down. And really what has carried the post office a little bit has been the revenue from mail. As much as the volumes in mail are coming down, but the revenue has been growing marginally there. And of course, if the rate of growth of revenue is lower than the rate of growth of cost, then the net losses are going to become even bigger. It's just a measure of progression. Slide number 21, it just graphically indicates that over years, our branches have been creating significant losses. And as the profits, which are the blue blocks, as the profits from May have also been coming down, the whole thing has just worsened. Therefore, that started from 2012. Again, the key driver originally having been the non-profitability of our branches. Slide 23, Madam Chair, just give me a chance to speak about this particular one and the one after that, because it's closer to home. What it says, I'm just going to focus at the piece at the bottom there. What it says is that in branches that are making losses, in fact, the money that we make from those branches is not even enough to cover wages and salaries. So for every rand of revenue, we've got a shortfall of 19 cents for our wages and salaries. Those are in loss-making branches. When the profit, I'm sorry, the property on those branches also takes 35% of our revenue. For every rand we get, 35% of it goes to property. The opposite is true if you look into the profitable branches, where for every rand we get of revenue, we've got enough to cover salaries and wages because we're using fewer people in those branches, and property in those branches is very cheap. This quick then tells us that salaries and wages, as well as properties, are key in the cost of operating the branches. And in the next slide, Madam Chair, it's so painful to note that our top 20 profitable branches are actually in less urban areas. It's semi-urban to rural areas, with the Eastern Cape having most profitable branches because property is cheap there and the branches actually find very few people. And our lowest profitable branches are in urban areas, Sandton and Cape Town are leading. Again, property there is very expensive and we have tended to use malls where we pay an arm and leg for rental charges. So this is the situation that we now need to correct. If I move therefore to slide number 25, the same picture emerges on the logistics side, on the courier side, where the box on the right-hand side indicates the number of products that are actually loss-making, and those are the net losses that those products make. at least our biggest products, yet they are actually not profitable, which just draws the whole thing downwards to a loss-making position. So the whole product mix, therefore, is a problem there that we need to address. This next slide, therefore, talks to the future picture. This slide, if I can just focus on the two columns there. There is a column on the left-hand side, the far left, which has got that 69 blue there. And then I'm going to focus on the other one that's got weight. What this column is telling us is that currently, male, which is the blue block on the left-hand side, contributes 69% of our revenue, and logistics contributes 12, postbank contributes 12, and retail only contributes 7. So we are heavily dependent on male, and male is continuing to decline in volume. What we are aiming for, therefore, is that by 2020, I'm now moving to the column that says weight percentage. We are aiming for a mix where male is going to have 50% contribution, and we're going to improve our contribution in logistics from 12 to 15%, postbank from 12 to 20, and retail we're going to double. So this is our effort to try and balance the income stream so that we're not too dependent on one form of income, because if that form of income then collapses, the whole thing comes down. So the FPC is geared towards achieving this by 2020. Slide 27 is pretty busy, but this is a very important slide, and Madam Chair, we're going to circulate the much more simplified slide to the members of the committee that we have since developed. And it will basically show that there are four key pillars of our turnaround plan. Those are the ones in red circles. Of course, the primary one is that we've got a social mandate. But the key focus is now to make sure that the reserve area, which is where the mandate is actually made, it must be able to generate enough revenue to cover the cost. It must have the right balance. And we must look into the policy and the legislation that covers the area as well. That's the first pillar of our general plan. This is where then the department, the ICASA, and ourselves engaging quite aggressively to find a solution to that particular point. The second pillar is ensuring that we diversify our income stream as indicated in the previous slide, where we are now going to push more business on the parcel side and push more business on the branches as well. The third pillar is looking into our financial resource base. This really talks into how can we become a preferred partner of the government and generate money from there, of course. And secondly, how can we be more better positioned in the eyes of the public? They can be able to pay most of their accounts either through the branch itself or pay the accounts through the digital post office that we'll be introducing. That is then going to improve our financial space. And then the last portion of our pillar, or the last pillar of our STP, talks to pushing productivity in order to reduce cost. Again, we talk about an organization that has got more than 23,000 employees, has had the same number of employees even though the volume has been declining. So whilst that provides employment, on the other hand, it shows that productivity is a problem there. The slide is an interesting one, but I'm not going to go into the detail of it, Madam Chair. Suffice to say that it clearly indicates that if nothing is done, we are going to continue with the losses that we see. And the key for us will be to push our net revenues over the next 3 years. That is the green box there that is for net revenue. We need to achieve 4.4 billion rand of revenue growth in 3 years. At the same time, we need to reduce our cost significantly for the next 3 years. We're close to 4.6 billion.
Yes.
Sorry, I was just coming in to say we are going to leave at 12 o'clock. It won't be good that we have more time that exceeds the presentation exceeds the time for engagement. Having another strategic meeting that we cannot lose. I know, I don't undermine the intelligence of other members who will be remaining behind, but it's important to have that ample chances base to engage. Again, looking at in the context that some of the information here was presented by the DG when we're dealing with telecommunication. It's just a humble intervention.
Thank you. I don't know the way forward. I know that you came to present your threat plan, and for us it's important to hear what you're saying too. But if you can try to do it in a certain you're almost done. In a time. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm not going to, I think this slide we have adjusted it a bit and put in more color to make it easy to read. Where we have got red blocks, it means we are vacant, we don't have anybody in those positions. Mm-hmm. And where it's yellow, it means decisions are still to be made regarding those positions. And where there is blue, that's when we've got people that are leading the organization. So immediately you realize when you talk about leadership stability, that we've got serious challenges, and filling those positions is a matter of agency. I think that is the basic question, message there. This particular one is the one that has certainly caused a fair amount of interest, understandably, because it talks to the reduction of jobs, that we are looking into the FCP also reducing jobs by 5,065. This is not people, but it's jobs. Of course, there will be areas where people will be affected, and the numbers there indicate the number of people banned that will be affected. Already, we have reduced jobs by 903, so we now have 5,065, less 903, and we are then going to start the Section 189 process, either today or tomorrow, which will be focusing on offering early retirement packages. Of course, 1,500 people that qualify for early retirement packages. After that, we are going to look into offering voluntary packages to those that will be interested. So ultimately, we expect the number of people that will be affected, the actual retrenchment, to be significantly lower than the 5,000 jobs that are affected. We have developed a number of mitigation plans. I'm not going to go through them in their entirety. We are finalizing these plans and communicating them with the union leader. More importantly, we have had input from the union leaders on what we should consider. So some of the points you see there have actually come from the union leaders themselves. And the income statement is very clear. Originally, we're expecting, in this current financial year, we're expecting a loss of 1.5 billion. We are aggressively targeting a loss of 123 million based on the FTP. And I'm saying aggressively because that's quite a significant turnaround that is required there. Manager, on slide 41, I have spoken briefly at the beginning about the funding requirements. I would imagine the DG has covered in the past some of the overdraft facilities that we have secured. The key one for now is really trying to get funding from commercial banks. We have targeted 1.2 billion from commercial banks. We are currently sitting with term sheets that total to 1 billion from three commercial banks, and the discussion with those commercial banks are currently underway, and those discussions are led by National Treasury, and that borrowing will be at the back of the 1.67 bid guarantee that was issued by the Minister Twele and Nene in December last year. Of the financial,
what I wanted to highlight was that this was the main issue that contributed to us delaying the finalization of the finances and therefore the tabling of the annual report.
because the auditors were of the view that without the state guarantee, the opinion will be better for going concern. And once you've got an audit opinion of a going concern, it puts the entity at risk that you've got the creditors can literally declare the entity in terms of liquidate. So that's really the issue. I think we then went through the process of it from August, October, or September, was it September, October, until December, where finally we were able to resolve this. And then immediately after getting the guarantee, we were then able to convene the AGM. We had the AGM of support just after Christmas or just before Christmas. 22nd of December, we then went through the AGM. And then after Christmas or before New Year, we were then able to table the annual report.
Thank you very much. And if I can move then, Manchester, to the next slide. We've spoken about the regulation and the policy issues that are currently underway, so I'm not going to go into any more detail on that particular slide. Implementation readiness, this is absolutely crucial. I think the President has really been focusing on this. We've developed the plan at high level. We have now developed plan at the GM level, which is two levels below the CEO, and each plan will be monitored and reported to on a quarterly basis for each of the managers. So we'll be tracking the performance of each manager on a quarterly basis against this plan. And we're aiming for all the managers that will need to have plans to have signed on those plans by the second week of June. So this is an era that is really receiving a lot of attention and a lot of aggression, and we'll be reporting regularly to the right authorities and structures regarding implementation progress. The approval of the FDP itself, Madam Chair, on slide 4 is already underway. I believe it's now at cabinet level. We're implementing the structure. The new structure will actually mean even at EXCO level, instead of having 15 EXCO members, we're going to bring them down to about 8, much, much leaner. We are pursuing the government business. So we sometimes would not show up for some of the tenders. This time around, we are really going out and make our presence felt. And as I said, the idea is not to expect headouts, but to go out and be competitive. I've spoken about the funding. We are, every opportunity we get, we are meeting and engaging customers to ensure that they are able to understand what is it that the post office is doing to fix itself. Engagement with the labor is that indicator going on with the various structures that are maintained, that I've mentioned. And I've also mentioned the discussions with ICASO on managing the encroachment, also looking into how the whole area can be managed properly. And without doubt, the implementation is a big one for us, given our history of having plans that we did not implement. But I've tried to rush away, apologies if I've missed some current information, but that then brings us to the end of the presentation.
Thank you very much, CEO. I was saying this morning when we had our management committee, maybe you will go in detail, and I really appreciate the fact that you give a detailed presentation, because for me it was difficult to pick up and understand when going through this. So thank you very much for that. The time limit is, because we are pushed to have more than one meeting, I don't think that the members really want to do it, but the interest to ask questions for them is very important. That's why they push for you to run through this. I don't think it is because of other reasons. Thank you very much for the very, very comprehensive presentation. I'm going to allow the members to post ends for questions for those who are going to leave early. I just want to apologize for this morning that the catering was not sorted out. There is something that you can grab if you need it. You really need to say something outside. Thank you. You can have it during this session. Member, can you give us Mr. Malambu, Member Pahu, Member Nyambi, and Honorable Member Ding, and Honorable Member Masambu.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me also welcome the in-depth presentation from the department. It was very informative. Thank you, DG and the team. I want to ask my question according to slide, but I hope that the acting CEO will understand. There was a mention of Section 12 from the bank, not the prospect, but the Bank Act, yeah, the Reserve Bank, thank you. I didn't understand it properly, if you can unpack it, because you said the process, according to what I heard, is that it started in 2005, if I'm not mistaken. 2005, it's 2015 now, right? Too long. The other question would be on the issue of SANRAL and a team of managers who were negotiating with SANRAL in terms of the work that SANRAL wanted the department or the post office to do for them, and they couldn't negotiate properly. What steps were taken in addressing that issue? The third one will be how did you lose the account, the salary account? Because from where I'm standing, that account was, or those accounts were crucial for the post office. I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much.
Chair, let me welcome the presentation. I have two questions. The first one I know is a common question that relates to the imminent redundancy of workers. Just want to check, because on slide 443, you are indicating or alleging that the labor industry has submitted their inputs. I will assume, from what I understand, that the inputs they took or they conduct this imminent retrospect. But then you also spoke about the early retirement. Is this early retirement informed by, I understand, the financial muscle conditions that affect the post office, but this early retirement is informed by the skill that is, you might say, these people, they don't have the skills, therefore they might take early retirement. That's point number one. But then, linked to that is the communication programs that we have established. Maybe you can articulate to us how authoritative they are. Do they have authority to engage and take decisions at that level? Because my understanding is that this has been decentralized in terms of engagement with the labor union. And the third point, Chair, talks to your slide, since you say, or you said, you want to change the face, the content of different segments, your retail, your mail, your post bank. My understanding is that it will not be as one thing, I am my own child. Now you can put, or you don't understand it, is that it's not gonna be automatic because of the Holy Spirit that you're gonna achieve the 20%, the 50%, and doubling the 7% to 2 or 3 performance. Now, my issue is, because you are saying to us, the revenue that you have is exceeded by the cost. It's exceeded by the cost, and you are putting a particular vision, a particular timeline that you shall have achieved this particular goal. But now, my point is, if not, what next? Because you shall have not addressed the cost versus the revenue. Maybe I'm a little bit challenged in terms of verbalizing my thought on this particular matter. Thanks, DJ.
Thank you, Honorable
Member. Honorable Nyami. Thanks, Chair. The first one is about the vacancies. Because we are dealing with the plan, I expected a slide. I don't know whether we can get it at the later stage if it's not going to assist us to detail the time frame of dealing with those vacancies, so that at the end of the financial year, when preparing the strategic plan, it will assist us to do justice to that process, and each year team will be giving credit to issue and being critical in a very constructive way, but it will minimize our role if we don't have that information. The second issue that is very, very important. It's not a question, but it's more of a way of the advice of what you must consider in future when you are coming to us. When we're doing introduction, all of us, we never just presented names like normally a portfolio committee would do. I said I'm Jomo Nyambi from the most beautiful province, Mpumalanga. I'm not just doing that because it's something that it's a procedure. It's because my role in the National Council of Provinces is to represent the interests of Mpumalanga. My friend next to me is representing Free State. The other one is Gauteng. The other one will be Gauteng. The other one will be Northern Cape, Western Cape, all the provinces. So, if you prepare a presentation for a select committee, the difference between us and the portfolio committee, you can have this one. It's a very good detailed information. But when you're coming to a select committee, try to have a presentation that will reflect what you'll be doing in these provinces. So that I don't ask, when I'm going to do the oversight in Western Cape or in Mpumalanga, or we've got a program taking parliament to the people, what would be our role in doing oversight in what we are doing in that particular province? And from your, I think the third, if not the, the fourth slide, the fourth slide, yes. In your fourth slide, you are showing the post office, mail centers, and everything. But if you can take it from the first slide and have something that will reflect even your employees, what is happening in all these provinces, because that will make us, when dealing with you, to do it justice, and we are focusing or sticking to our role as a select committee. And once we are able to do that, it will save us much time and avoid a repetition. What's the use of coming to parliament? Because the drafters of the constitution were very clear and they knew what they were doing. It's just that we tend to do our own things. You go to portfolio committee, they ask you the same question. You come to us for asking the very same question. Why are we not combining ourselves with the NA and be one and do the one thing, and then you go back to Pretoria, different provinces, and do working? Ours is to make sure that the interest of these provinces is taken into consideration. So it's an appeal, CEO and DJ, that at all times when coming to the select committee, make it to reflect the impact in provinces, and it will make us do it justice, and it will also make us to assist you, because we're not here to just celebrate seeing a wrong and celebrate because there's something that is wrong. But we are here to do oversight. And in the process of it doing oversight, we want to be assisting you in making sure that you are achieving your plans. But there's no way that we're going to do it, because if I go back to Mpumalanga, and if I don't see a sign, I won't know what is happening in Mpumalanga. But with the presentation that we've done in after attending the Select Committee, if I go to Nkangala, I might know that you have seven or post offices there in this place and that place. If I go to another region, same thing, and that would minimize some of the challenges that we are experiencing and also we are experiencing as members of the Select Committee and Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable
Member. Thank you, Chair. I should like to welcome the sentiments of the other members in regards to the presentation made this morning. I have a few questions. One is that when the Acting CEO mentioned that there's 780 million food supplies and he's getting telephone calls even on the weekends, that's a cause for concern, because that's just for anybody out when you get called on the weekends, you hope to enjoy that family time. What I'd like to know is how we intend paying off those creditors whilst being sustained at the same time to do your day-to-day business. And the other big problem we experienced is the number of unions that have now been in the post office. Mm. I would like to know, have you got around with the consultation of all the unions now? And if they are also buying to your strategy, as well as will the union have sufficient time to get back to the members to give you feedback? You mentioned the performance agreements that managers assign. I would like to know if all your managers have now signed it so that you can do your assistance from those agreements. Will you be able to fully in your vacant position timelessly now that you're expecting employees take their early retirement or pension packages? We don't have a situation like we had in the Department of Education some years back when we offered us out and we had a problem in education. And after that process of the employee taking the packages for retirement, will you then be able to fill those positions tightly? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Member, Matsango.
Thanks, Chair. I just need to find out, before I ask my questions, there was a request for members that were going to leave at a certain stage. Will they not need their questions responded to before those that are remaining ask their questions?
Yeah, can you do how many questions do they have? Thank you. Can I give over to you? If you don't have the details, you can give us maybe a broad overview of the answers and forward with a detailed answer. If you don't have the answer, I'm sure that you will be capable to deal with the answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Manager, and thanks for the question from the member of the committee. The application for, which is called Section 12 application with the Reserve Bank, it's quite a demanding process, and two key factors have contributed to the delay. The first one was that the numerous changes at leadership level and just disrupted the momentum, because it requires very careful management in terms of the resources that it requires. It's quite a detailed process, and the numerous changes, therefore, at leadership level did not help the situation. At some point in time as well, it was discovered that the management team did not have the necessary skills to actually identify what the Section 12 requires, and more importantly, to deliver on those application requirements for Section 12. The whole process right now has gone quite a significant way, courtesy of the support that was sought out to PwC years gone back. But more importantly as well, this process requires appointment of the board members, which according to our requirements must be fit and proper. And that's an aggressive process to match all those names that have been submitted by Minister to SARB. The other element of it requires that the assets of Postbank and SARB be separated. And that must be based on the audited financials. That auditing process was also, the auditing process was also lengthy, but I'm happy to report that the Minister has since made a ruling on that and has signed a letter separating the assets of SARB and those of Postbank. Because in all respects, Postbank, from a SARB point of view, must operate as a completely separate entity with less dependence on SARB. In doing so, it gives comfort to the Reserve Bank that the depositors' funds are safe and the funds of the public are safe. So it's been a lengthy process. The Minister has engaged as well with the Reserve Bank to make sure that whatever issues exist are taken out immediately, and also to ensure that there is alignment. But I have to say that there was a point where the numerous changes at leadership level, at board and executive, just disrupted the momentum there. There was a question on Sandrock, which is an example that I used. And this was an example that was showing that from a competence point of view on how to manage customers, we've got a long way to go. No disciplinary action was taken against these managers. However, it indicated that from a skill set point of view, we are lacking. And part of the SCP, therefore, will be to ensure that we've got a very aggressive training and development program that is going to address those shortcomings. Because the managers that went there were looking at it purely from the point of view that whatever account we get must give us good profit. And they didn't look beyond that. And they didn't offer alternatives to Sunroll as a potential customer. They thought, we can actually structure this deal in A or B or C format, whichever is comfortable, then we are going to go with that. So it was more of a training and coaching thing, and that's what we have done with those managers. The SARB account is a lengthy discussion, Madam Chair. I think it will perhaps be better to have a written report on this particular one, because there was a court ruling after SARB had started dispersing the grant. The process was challenged in court, and the court ruled against SAFO, and since then there's been a number of court cases actually that have set. So because of the sensitivity of that matter then with those court judgments, I'm going to propose that we submit a written response just to give the committee the view of how it happened and actually where the process is right now. Because still there are legal issues regarding that entire process. I think it was another member who asked about the early retirement. The early retirements are always the easiest form of reducing jobs if they are faced with that crucial situation that necessitates that. But implementing them is equally difficult, because you need to find the right balance between raising the people that want to go because they are 63, they are 62, at the same time ensuring that you still retain the skill. So as the process unfolds, therefore, it's not going to be a wholesale release of anybody who qualify. But there will be a selection mechanism where those whose skills will be required to implement the SDP will be requested to remit. And we have communicated that as well, that the organization reserves the right to send down applications for early retirement. I'm going to ask Mr. Lamakon to me here to just cover the issue of the communication forum because it's actually needing the particular area so that he can get it for hand from him.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think when we were last year at DG, we talked a little bit about this issue of the union and the communication forum. One of the principal things we agreed with the union, as members will be aware, we have a variety of agreements with the union over a number of years. We then took an in-principle decision that said from now on, only agreements that are arrived at in the properly constituted forum will be implemented. So just go to your point. So those communication forums now have the authority to take the decision. But we will not have any agreements outside of those forums. Yeah, so that we don't have the situation that we were describing to you last time we were here. So at the moment, they are working. There is continual communication. Members will appreciate that this is a very tense time for the post office and for the workers of the post office. And unions, of course, by virtue of their mandate, are there to protect the interests of their workers. So it's going to be, as my comrade has said, it's not going to be an easy task. It's going to be an uphill task. But we are confident that as we continue to engage with the unions, that we will arrive at some palatable or amicable agreement as to the way forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair, the question?
Sorry, CEO. I want to ask while you are answering this question, what role is the department? Is the department of labor playing a role in the world?
As the CEO pointed out, Madam Chair, clearly the level of trust between the unions and the management had reached rock bottom. So the first thing that happened was the minister stepping in and instituting what was then called the village forum. The second thing that then happened was that in moving forward, it was quite clear that the two parties, not trusting each other, were not in a position to drive themselves forward into a new arena. So we brought in the CCMA, which is what the CEO was referring to help the two parties come to some understanding and how they go forward. So although we are not against the Department of Labor, what we have done is brought the CCMA in to try and deal with this issue on our behalf. Thank you.
I know that Minister has been talking to the Minister of Labor because, I mean, one of the discussions, he said that, I'm not sure whether it was him or the Minister of Labor, but the discussion went into the extent of the conduct of management, that for us to be able to resolve the issues that we are dealing with, one of the things we need to look at intensely is the conduct of management in how they're engaging and how they're dealing with issues of labor.
Thank you, Chair. There was a very important question from I don't remember, Pavis, regarding the alternative. What happens if cost continues to rise but revenues are not being materialized? This is one of the key reasons, Madam Chair, we've looked very strongly into how we can diversify our revenue streams so that we are not dependent on one form of revenue, so that we are not dependent on Maine, which is currently contributing 69%. Therefore, the focus will be on electronic bill payments. We are meeting a number of customers, most of which actually in Cape Town, on electronic bill payment. We are looking into the logistics, the parcel business. It's one of the fastest growing sectors in South Africa, but the post office has not been able to take advantage of that growth. So this diversification of revenue streams is actually aimed at making sure that we are not dependent on one form of revenue and indeed able, therefore, to balance the revenue and cost. It is not going to be easy and it's not going to be that alone. We are also going to be focusing, as indicated, on the elements, the four elements of the turnaround plan. The fourth element actually talks to productivity gains. We've already done very, very good work on the logistics side, where we've identified vehicles that we underutilized, we've identified trucks that are moving between Johannesburg and Durban carrying mail, that is sometimes 40% full. So all those productivity opportunities are part of the areas that we'll be focusing on. I can give an example for that if you're moving mail currently from Vils in Johannesburg to Durban, only 38% of the total weight there is actually mail. The rest is really underutilized capacity. So all those opportunities therefore will help us find the right balance. It's a lot of work. It's really a lot of work that still needs to be done, as DG has indicated. But at least we have identified them, and we are putting resources behind those opportunities. Also, going together with this, without doubt, you have indicated that this is not going to happen through the Holy Spirit alone. The Holy Spirit will contribute, but a lot of work will have to be done in changing the mindset of the organization. We are currently reviewing the way we are structured. I'm going to give an example, Madam Chair, quickly. That currently we have, for example, the retail. They've got their own property section. They've got their own salespeople. They've got their own vehicles. And then you've got mail as well. They've got their own property people. They've got their own vehicles. So there is this huge duplication in the organization, which on itself is waste in the organization. So a lot of work then is going to go into ensuring that we've got a new organogram, a new organizational structure. And without doubt, a lot of focus will go into training and development so that we operate differently in order to take out that waste. It's not an overnight process, I'm not sure. It requires a lot of focus.
Just to follow up on this one, remember that performance management indicators also the mental effects that we call I think you can proceed with the answer and then allow us to ask our questions and maybe follow up. But you can also respond in writing for the benefit of the members who will it. I'm sorry about that.
The slide on vacancies, Madam Chair, we're going to provide that. That will indicate then the timelines, et cetera, that will be required for the filling of vacancies. I'd like to indicate, Madam Chair, that given the fact that the reputation of our organization is almost in tatters, it becomes extremely difficult to get the right caliber of people into an organization like that. We are already struggling with people that are either unavailable to join us, even though we have made offers. But those that are saying, well, I'm now going to come at a premium, I'm now going to charge you more because I'm taking a risk, we will provide that information. And we appreciate the advice that we have got from another member, Nyambi, as well, regarding how to approach our presentations. Space we're not used to, so we are learning and therefore that. And then, when I remember, Mrs. Singh pointed out to the playoff of creditors, the funding that we have applied for, supported by the 1.7 guarantee, a significant portion of that funding is actually going to go towards the clearing of all those outstanding creditors. That has been allocated, and the minister has been very strict in how we manage the particular area so that we are not in bad standing with our suppliers. I have indicated particularly those small entrepreneurs, some of whom depend entirely on the post office. So that will be taken care of through the funding application. The consultation with the unions, Madam Chair, I think it should be fair to also provide a little bit more write-up on that, given the fact that sometimes we go through the presentations and consult the unions, and we believe they're aligned, and the next morning we read something out in the newspaper. So I think we'll be better off providing the committee with the dates of which union did we meet, representatives of that union, and just a brief input or feedback on what sort of discussions took place in that particular area. There was a question on the performance agreements. We are in the process of signing those performance agreements, and Madam Chair made a very good point regarding the alignment of those performance indicators, because if upgrade scorecard does need something else, and my team going a completely different direction, we're not going to implement that successfully. It is taking us a fair amount of time to get the alignment right. It's not a process that happens easily in our organization. There is a bit of resistance in certain areas, but all in all, we've got very clear timelines that all the managers that need to have contracts by end of June are going to have those contracts in place. Taking into account that we also have people that are going to move around the organization because of the new structure. Yeah, I think Madam Chair has covered by and large all the
another issue, Chairperson members, just to note that the performance agreement always deals with issues that are at the level of an entity. From our side as a shareholder, we then need to hold the board accountable. We already have got a draft shareholder contract, which is an agreement, like a performance agreement between us as a shareholder and the board. And one of the things that the shareholder contract they make reference to is the implementation of a corporate plan. So what then the owner is going to be upon us is to ensure that we also manage that process so that if they don't deliver, we don't wait for the individuality. Of course, for them to deliver on the shareholder contract, they must ensure that the CEOs or executives are delivering on their performance agreement. So I think from your side, it's going to be at least it's what happened at the level of shareholder.
Thank you. The other question is covered. Yeah, but they still want outstanding the position. I can see.
I can position for.
Yeah, if I can briefly respond to that, Madam Chair, what we've done is build a gap analysis. So we therefore know where we've got skills shortages, and we're going to recruit for those. And we're not able to, whether we're going to recruit internally or externally, it doesn't matter, we've already started the process. And based on the analysis that we've done, particularly on those employees that we know are likely to take the early retirement package, we've done the skills assessment as well to know which ones we'd like to retain, which ones we will be open to discuss the exit with them. But it's really based on the skills assessment that is required by the SEP, whether the skills set that we have or do not have.
Thank you, CEO. Can I hand over to Honorable Hosangu?
Thank you, Chair. I think the SEPO and the DG were answering questions. Some of the questions that I had were covered, as it were. But the one question that I have is the question on the, because enough information has been given in terms of the changing environment of the postal services space. And I just wondered if the main act, you know, the Postal Services Act, if it needs some relooking to ensure that the time at which we are and the changes that are taking place in the Postal Services Act are actually taken care of, so that we don't go ahead with the work of in this case the demand strategy and then find that our acts are not supporters, as it were. And then the other question, I was reading the CEO's report on this 2014, I think, and there's a part where the CEO says that in compliance with the UFO, a number of branches were opened or something. And I just wondered, you know, what were the penalties that were going to be suffered by the consulate if they did not comply to the US rules because of the turbulent time through which the consulate is not going. I'm assuming that this is the time when all these labor relations and industrial action was going on, because later in presentation the CEO is putting so clearly that the way he's talking about the profits and the revenue and all the things that are, the more they have to manage in terms of those branches, the less profits they're getting out of it. So I'm just wondering how the USO actually imposes undue pressure on the entity to actually do the things that it would otherwise be advisable not to do. And then the other question is the CEO, I think also the fact that we had to ask the CEO to be sure actually, you know, took away from a lot of value that we were getting from the presentation, because there's a part where the CEO was talking about the readiness. I think the readiness of implementing the SDP, and I was interested, it just piqued my interest to hear and listen how wide-ranging that readiness is. Is it readiness at management, at staff level, at shop floor, and all those things? Because due to the denting of the image of the post office, a lot of even attitude has just gone south, if you know what I'm trying to say. And the last question also has to do with the usage of the services of the post office by Parliament itself. How is that? And is it happening? Is it happening at what level? Because obviously if we are going to say that the services of the post office must be used by government, Parliament itself must also be sort of open to doing that. And then the last question, Chair, has to do with the internet shopping. How much of the business is the post office getting? Because, I mean, for me, especially for younger people, I mean, they receive shoes and things that they buy from Zendo every day. And is the post office getting some of the business? Just in broadly, I mean, I'm just trying to find out how far the post office's services are being used, or is the post office exploring to use them? And that will be all, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I think I can also post my questions. So what was in the thing up in my mind is that the implementation of the strategy. If the board, when will you report the board member? And if we don't have, the other issue for me is if we have no comments like the equity, are we going to implement the strategy?
Mm.
And that is the question in my mind, because tomorrow or next time you will come and present to us, due to the not the position not being filled, therefore A, B, C, D, and E, and F. And if we're talking about this bring stability into the organization, into the post office, we need to stabilize the entire institution to make it possible to implement the general strategy. Otherwise, it's not going to be our mind. The other, I'm not going to add a question. The other question that I need to ask is if you can still ask maybe about the robbery, what security measures you have in place. You know about the 6 years ago, I was in the game, and yeah. So that the incident doesn't happen again. Then the suspended, the airways, the South African Airways. See, the outstanding, you talk about the outstanding, that lots of payments. Can we hear, I know that maybe you don't want to talk about it, but can we hear something before it was in the news? And people will talk about it in maybe their budget season. So can we just hear it from now? Then we minimize the budget speed for the person who wants to talk about things. Then also the So recovery is a facility owned by Apple to the cellular MTN providers and providers. Can we also listen about it?
And then we're also young.
Equally important is to go to the issue of the labor relations. A very conducive relationship between workers. A sense of patriotism to a country that we are developing. I don't think this limited decision is so exploitative to the workers. Just open up a way of engaging one another. So, also appreciating that there's a creation of this regional structure. Though I didn't hear well, when you mention also regional port, because port also bringing other nations to the environment. Because when you hear that somebody is saying in a port, it goes also with some other text. And then if it's in a port, it's enjoying some sitting allowance or traveling allowance. So it is a structure. Not that it's called a port. If it is a port, maybe I didn't get wet. But nonetheless, no question. My colleagues have contributed immensely to ask questions which are fairly also responded to. So, what is this department? This is really coming from, but look, what is it operating clearly on a commercial bank? I can hear the energy from the CEO. The energy that says, we want to see the post bank now being a corporate world. Put it in the scenario of a standard bank. But you get there from a cleaner up to you. You'll be heading what you they call it
that mention is that you is an appraisal system that will be having put it in place, where we are not just going to wait for a particular percentage to be say, look, at any given time, there should be an appraiser in the appraisal in a particular conducive environment, say, in the next 5 years, I want to see myself somewhere here. Or for the past 6 months, what do you think? How am I performing? And this is what I'm saying, I am performing. Engage. Not necessarily waiting only for that mob that will be coming and saying, the integrated governance system is what they used to get on. Okay. It's not a question, I was just making a wish you all the best. Then together we can make it better. Let's move post-bank forward.
Thank you, dear person. Yeah, I was just thinking this thing also of sticky boxes. People are not using that anymore. These things also... Now telephone numbers over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for the questions. The three questions, I think, from I don't remember my son, well, it's a number of HR system and so on.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. First of all, this act, indeed, we'll all be aware that the Postal Services Act was promulgated in 1998. And part of what has been undertaken now by the TPS is something called a policy review. That policy review, to my understanding, is now complete. And the intention around the policy review was then to generate a white paper that then says, in the current environment, in the 21st century, what do we propose to see as a post office, etc., etc., what services should it offer. The white paper would then give guidance to any legislative changes that are required. We have already started discussion, for example, with ICASA around some of the regulations, when precisely to the question you asked about retail outlets, for example. We have argued quite strenuously that ICASA, these retail targets should be based on needs. In other words, identify where you actually think there is a need for a post office and the services that the post office offers. And then we can actually put a retail outlet there. Not just a compliance measure that says you must roll out 50 post offices every year. So that's part of the review that we are undertaking. Ordinarily, penalties for not meeting USO targets are up to a maximum of 10 million rand. But what we did in this past year is, again, with the leadership of the DPS, we engaged ICASA very early on. And we explained to them our situation and to what extent these targets were becoming onerous for the post office. We then agreed that there would be a relaxation of those targets for the 2015-2016 year, and further, that there will be a renegotiation of those targets in the ensuing years thereafter. So we are looking more to a regulation that looks at sustaining the post office rather than a regulation that is just not compliant.
Yeah. Sure. But recall, Honorable Masango, that at the head of it, you've got the Postal Services Act that says that post office has got a monopoly with regard to 1 kilogram letters. Yeah. But what has not happened, which is the challenge that we've raised with the regulator, is effective regulation. Because the idea was that you've got this monopoly, you're going to get revenue. You will then use your revenue to then provide the USO. Now, in a situation where your regulated market is encroached, it therefore is encroaching your revenue. It therefore makes it difficult for SACO to then operate in the mail business. Remember that the mail business, the tariff is very low. It's equivalent to something like that. The tariff is also very low. And there's also a process of how you increase your your tariff, which is generally, is it below or almost inflation? Mm-hmm. So that's why you've got a scenario where the cost has been overpassing the revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you then have is you've got a scenario where you've got a challenge with your revenue, but here's the demand to increase your ESO. So the idea was in our engagement with regulators that we're not challenging the space of this ESO, but we need the regulator to be effective with regard to monitoring compliance. Because if this regulator was able to demonstrate a case that says that I've done my compliance and I can prove that you all that this regulated market is yours, then there's a case to say you must then address the ESO. So I think it's about really dealing with the whole space in totality.
Thank you, DG. I think that's very important. In fact, I would even go a bit further and suggest we need to relook at the product. The letter was the preeminent way of communicating at that time. What do we look at now? Do we talk now of parcels of 2 kgs? Or what do we do? As a way of relooking at legislation. Those are part of the debate on the November that we are engaged. There's the issue of readiness of implementation of SEC. Manager, staff, shop floor. There has been a consistent engagement and information since January. And in fact, the CEO will now be undertaking these roadshows across the country to disseminate this issue and to explain what is required to all the employees. I think it goes without saying that for a great deal of the employees, the major focus is, of course, on this thing about retrenchment. And we have to look at that fully in the face, but also provide alternatives for those employees. But I think in terms of the readiness, outside of critical skills that the CEO has already pointed out that are lacking at executive level, because there are so many vacancies at the executive level, there is readiness, and there is certainly a willingness on the part of management that is there to actually go and implement this. Is this STP. You said your host office at Parliament? We have a host office.
Yeah,
okay. But it's not in use. People come in from time to time for various things, but it's not our model post office, let's put it that way. It's not our most profitable post office. Yeah, but certainly we, as part of our engagement around increasing revenue from government business, we will certainly be even talking to Parliament. For example, when Parliament moves a lot of papers and buckets and whatnot, who are you using? And it certainly is not the post office, because otherwise I wouldn't be saying what I'm saying there. So we will have to have that engagement with the Secretary of Parliament, etc., to understand to what extent we can utilize the post office to better serve the Parliament and the precinct. In respect to e-commerce, I think for us this is absolutely crucial, what you are calling internet shopping, man. I think for us, it is a growth area. We have identified parcels as the growth trajectory for the post office. And parcels are being generated a lot by internet shopping. One of the things you will see at the moment is we are starting to get huge volume coming in from China. That's our what we call our Johannesburg International Mail Center. Huge numbers of parcels are coming through from China precisely because of internet shopping. And we are in liaison and talking to companies like the Mr. Prices of this world, etc., that we be in the position to move goods that are bought online on their behalf. So from where we're sitting at the post office, this is absolutely crucial business for us. If we are going to sustain the post office into the future, we have to be a significant player in that part of the market. Thank you. I'll let the CEO respond to the next question.
Thank you, Andrew. Just like to add, Manager, that regarding the usage of the post office by Parliament, we are developing a value proposition for government and for specific departments as well, which we are developing in conjunction with the DPF, and will also be shared with the Deputy President to say this is what the cost of it can do. And to us that is very, very crucial, because we have to be seen to be working together with our shareholder at all times, not only on the service provision side of things, but also commercially, and the movement of parcels is our forte, and that's what we should be saying aggressively to the government. E-commerce or internet shopping, this is a bit of hope. It's one of the areas that I like to believe, given the opportunity that I've been presented with to be part of the leadership team, that the growth officers will actually be one of the legacies that I will leave to have digitization coming out strongly in growth office, as analysts indicated, that we're already seeing massive improved increases in volumes coming out of China. There are more opportunities with some of the customers that also want to move up north to the Zodiac region, so engaging with those particular customers, and we'll be leveraging on the digital process that will be launching as well mid-June, that the minister will hopefully be available to launch on our behalf, because this is going to send a very strong message of how the post office is playing in the digital space and how the post office wants to make full use of the e-commerce opportunities. There was also a question on the appointment of the board, and I'm going to request the DG to assist me in that regard.
Hello, Chairperson and members. I think we did report on the status of the board, but in terms of where we are, we went through a process where we advertised for the nominations in line with the SACO Act. Unfortunately, the nominations that we got were not sufficient. We did engage the minister with regard to the weaknesses of what we have observed, that we were not necessarily able to honor the commitment in terms of the caliber and quality. If I'm correct, we then had to re-advertise the remaining.
Yes.
Yes, and we had to re-advertise, no? We had to re-advertise. The last submission, I think, was last week or so that I signed off to the minister. We had about 70 people. Mm-hmm. 70 nominations. Yes, I think we have about 70 nominations. We are engaging the minister in terms of the process. Hopefully from the 70, we should be able to find sufficient caliber in terms of the kind of skills. Like, for example, we have to have someone who has very good IT skills on the board, finances, legal. So you have to have a combination of the kind of skills that you need. But we are hoping to finalize the board. We've renewed the term of the administrator so that he's around when the board is in place to ensure the handover process. At least we need about a month for a handover between the administrator and the board. And you know that the current CEO, there is still a process under we have, we still have a CEO. And then that process is confident, we're not in a position or the CEO to move with regard to the issue of the CEO and the CFO. Hence, so with regard to the three executive positions, we only have the CEO who currently the, in terms of appointment, who's currently in place, who's currently the acting CEO.
Thank you, Chair. Looking to address the issue of the NASAPA that was on the newspapers, currently it's a long-running matter that is currently in the justice system space. We are going to provide you with a write-up that will show you the chronology of events, what has transpired and the decisions that have been made. Suffice to say that at the moment we have put in the 50 million rand amount in the sheriff's account, so that once then the court's final ruling has been made, if indeed it relates to that being paid, then it can be available. And also just to give comfort to the court that we are abiding and respecting the previous decision that was made by the court. But we'll provide a much more comprehensive write-up on that and cover some of the legal history on this matter, because it's been quite a long-running and complicated matter from a legal point of view.
Can I just say something on this? I heard yesterday there was a debate, social services. One member raised the thing of increasing of the service providers, 55% increase, until increasing. So I am just thinking that you can use this kind of things to really go out there and fight for the space to bring SACA payment data to the post office, because we want to deliver minimum, not a big cost, to our people, our clients. You know, they have to pay big amounts of cost for paying those service providers. So I think you must really look in plan and sit down and follow up those media things in the media now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Indeed, on the SAFSA letter, we are working with the department, as well as Department of Social Services. It's a matter that is going through the tender processes at the moment, and we are participating. We've developed a program in terms of how we're going to participate. And we're going to engage. We have been engaging with SAFSA as well. In that respect. This is also one of those complicated matters, but nevertheless, we've made it very clear that we are going to play in this particular space. We've looked at various scenarios of how we can play, and all of them point into us being able to offer the vast post office branch network that we have to make it easy for the citizens to access. The SAA members, Madam Chair, was certainly quite sensational. We'd like to believe unjustifiably so, because some of the delays were unfortunately due to SAA's own errors in their invoices. And unfortunately, they went to the media before they raised the matter with us, and we ended up having an unfortunate and undesirable media spat with state-owned companies, which I was uncomfortable with. As things stand, we are not in any bad books with SAA. Presented last week of releasing payment for them, and we've requested that in future, before they fly literally to the media, if they can engage with us if there is an oversight on our side. Later on, Ms. Noma is going to go back to the issue of race share regarding the robbery. I just wanted to quickly touch base on the payment of salaries as well as the public web program. It's certainly an area that is going to form part of the value proposition for the various government departments. We are actually doing that in the Eastern Cape, where we've got a very good record in working with the National Public Works in paying out the salaries, etc. The area, it does come with the other challenge of security in those branches, but in our efforts then to offer the value proposition, we'll be looking into what sort of investments need to be made to make sure those branches are secure and safe for citizens that will be utilizing them. The implementation was we are having vacancies. I think in a way the DG has touched on those. It does make it difficult, no doubt about it. It does mean we are currently stretching the very few competent individuals that we have in implementing the SGB. We are in the market, we are recruiting aggressively, but as I've indicated earlier on, it's not going to be easy to find the competent people given the circumstances that we have. But nevertheless, we are looking into the best possible candidates that we can find and try and get them on board as soon as we possibly can. Just to ask Andrew to refer to the matter of the robbery.
Thank you. Chairperson, you'll be aware that with post office having such a vast network, one of the things we ordinarily have to deal with, unfortunately, is attempted robberies and robbery, most of which will occur at the branch level. We have attempted to put as much security as we can. The financial situation, of course, has put a break in some of those efforts, but that is always a concern for us at the post office, not just in relation to protection of our employees, but also in respect of the customers who walk into the post office, that they must feel they are actually doing so in a safe environment. Every now and again, we get hijackings of our vehicles with syndicates and groups who are targeting parcels. To this end, we've consistently worked with staff to try and see how we can best resolve this matter. We have upwards of 4,000 or 5,000 trucks crisscrossing the country. So it's very difficult to try and just predict one truck, for example. So we work with SAFSA as far as we can to ensure that to a greater or larger extent, the trucks are protected or they're able to have access to SAFSA whenever there are incidences. But I'm happy to report that these incidences are far fewer than they used to be. They're much more attempts at breaking into retail offices, etc., and actually trying to hijack trucks. Because unless you actually know what's in parcels, it's a high-risk game for you as a hijacker. Because they're not really after the vehicles, they're actually after what's in the vehicles. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Is there any other follow-up? If not, I think I can give you a particular level because like you giving answers, more follow-up is coming out. But I want to thank you and I'm not going to teach you anymore. The last question that I want to ask and I have to ask is the service delivery of options in the post office. Why is it in your Western case you cannot say your license?
You can.
Perhaps an attempt to answer.
Because for us, particularly working here in a farmland, it would be so convenient to pay your things here.
Yes, Madam Chair, we have over the last 5 or so years been in discussion with the Western Cape government about the license visa issue. As you know, these matters reside within the provincial space. So where we've been successful in Gauteng, Northern Region, Northwest, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, etc., it has been because the provincial government have acceded to the request that people pay in the post office. For 5 to 6 years now in the Western Cape, we've met everybody who we can meet about trying to have that same service in the Western Cape, and we have failed a bit. So we would very much appreciate any efforts that you can make to indicate that you actually need this service. Because for us as the post office, it's an excellent service to provide. Thank you.
Thank you. We are going to do
I can answer you now. It's the fight of between revenue or not for the province or for the third office. I'm sorry. if this is what I think, if all depends on if the license fee that's coming to the province stays in the province, you know the answer.
It was what came up in my mind. Why is it in here you were referring to regulations? Oh, stuff. I was thinking some out of local government, in a speaker, I was struggling with the thing for regulations. Oh, that's too difficult. That's the thing with it. And our people doesn't understand, or maybe too heavy, I don't know, you must look at the unit to review all the old regulations that is holding us, because looking now on what the honorable member was saying, maybe it's part of those things. And you know what makes me, sometimes it's difficult, only when you are going to be in the position you will understand, it's not easy to do this. But I wonder why is our government not looking at those things? Because really those things are entering us. Only when there's a problem then you want to review and rebook and whatever. And then it's too late. We are all in the same thing. But, sorry, what is it? Thank you. From my side, this one thing I'm going to keep you busy. Because for me, South Africa, 21 years into the new democracy, we're still struggling with old things that are keeping us dead. So maybe it's not a point of danger again, that I think, all right. Sorry,
no license.
I'm just saying, no license. It's not easy to be in that position, obviously. But you don't understand. Why is that happening? Why is that Thank you. But from my side, I want to thank the department, and it is very interesting. You can see I have a lot on my mind that I want to all the records, you know, we have a discussion on a lot of things. But thank you for your time. Thank you for arriving. So that we can proceed with our business. Not from my side. I was very business with other people. They have other business. Thank you, Derek. You have a minute. We are going to go now. Thank you very much. That is why I'm busy.
I would say that I also did put outside the can I have a proposal for the Dukno members? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, they can. So we can use them as a propose? Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for your time. I don't know if they could, but you must not see if they put it outside. Don't wait. I smell like it. Yeah, the outside, honorable member, agency, CEO, CEO, you and your team who go and fly long hours, go and get something.
No, it's just a single person.
Good.
Just a That was sweet for breakfast.
Yeah.
At last, next year.
Yeah.